Well, hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to our very first episode of Mystify, God's Saltiest Women, a podcast that we are very excited to launch. Ooh. My name's Pastor Rachel.
My name is Gail Miller.
And we're very excited to start this thing off. Let's first start off a little bit about who we are so people know who we are and why we wanted to do this thing. So mm-hmm. Do you want to start us off, Gail, and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, I'm a student at Federal Way High School, and I've been going to Grace Lutheran ever since I was a baby. I was baptized here, and I have always had a very interesting connection to the church. I don't really look at God the same way that most people in the church look at God. I have a very, like, scholarly, statistical, logical look on religion and Christ and all that sort of stuff. So I like to bring history into the place of worship.
Yeah.
And so that's where I got this idea from, is because I also saw that in Pastor Rachel, and she inspired me to look into people in history who were related to the church. Mm-hmm. And I just saw a lot of interesting women, and I was like, wow, that'd be really interesting to, like, actually talk about in front of people. And here we are.
And here we are. Exactly. Yeah. And I'm so glad that you approached me. And I should say, my name's Pastor Rachel, and I'm Pastor of Grace, and I've been here a lot shorter than Gail has. I've been here 3 years, I think.
Yeah.
And if you've been here since you've been baptized, you've been here a lot longer than I am. So you're like the veteran here.
I am a veteran.
Totally.
Yes.
Totally. So I've been at Grace since the beginning of 2020, and have always found great inspiration and excitement when looking to examples of faithful living in our past. They're part of the communion of saints. It's a phrase we use at church a lot.
Right.
The idea being, it always makes me think of, do you know the Harry Potter series?
Oh, yeah. Okay, no, my mom eats it up, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Perfect. I never like to assume, because some people haven't, but, like, if you haven't, fix that. no judgment, but fix it. I always think of it as, like, there's a scene when he's standing, and then he's fighting the bad guy, Voldemort, and through a very magical enchantment between his wand and Voldemort's wand, he ends up being surrounded by the people who love and support him the most.
Oh.
So there are these kind of, like, wispy spirit beings that surround him.
Yeah.
And long story short, they happen to be his parents, his godfather, a school friend. Like, these are all people who have passed away, not people who are currently alive.
I didn't watch the movie, so.
That's okay. No, that's totally fine. So I always think of the communion of saints as similar to this idea, that it's sort of this, like, these people who have got your back, these people who you are related to in a very mystical, unique way, not through genetics, but through a shared understanding of humanity, a shared understanding of divinity, a shared understanding of spirituality.
Do you know the trope found family?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's what you're making
exactly.
me think of.
It's like found family beyond the limitations of time.
Exactly.
So, like, it's the reason that I open up books of mysticism and from the 1500s, and I'm like, oh my God, she gets it. Oh my God, he gets, like, this is it. This is so cool.
The time period may have been entirely different.
Oh,
they didn't
yeah.
have phones and, like,
exactly.
transportation, but, like, this girl, she gets
me. She gets me.
Right.
Like, I may not understand her English, like, I may need to translate through, like, Chaucer's English or something, but she still gets me. Like,
right.
And I get what she's saying, and mm-hmm. so that's kind of where this podcast came about, is finding those people, specifically those women, mm-hmm. in our history, in our faith history, our shared faith history,
mm-hmm.
who get it, who understand what it means to live your best life, but also to live a life that is so deeply rooted in community, so deeply rooted in call, so deeply rooted in love and faith.
And sometimes that's the same thing. Like, exactly. It's not like one is going against the other.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And sometimes it does mean questioning the powers that be. Sometimes it meant questioning the church. Sometimes it meant questioning the state. Sometimes it meant questioning family and family values. And so that's kind of where this whole podcast came about. And I'm so excited. This is going to be so cool.
This is going to be such a wild ride.
This is going to be fantastic. So basically how this pans out is every episode we'll be focusing on a different woman from our faith history. She may be venerated and made a saint in the church. She may still be seen as kind of an outsider. We don't really understand her. The main theme is that Gail and I both find her to be inspirational in some way. That's been our main deciding factor.
And she doesn't necessarily have to be Lutheran. She can also be a walk, any walk of Christianity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Knowing that there are so many great Lutheran female saints, and we're wanting to kind of bring to light some stories that people might not have heard of, or some parts of saints, or some parts of our shared female. We should come up with a name, not like saints, but our shared female
goddesses.
Yeah, goddesses.
I can't think of any other like mystical women word other than goddess.
I keep thinking of like these queens, but also like we're also talking a lot about like political powers, and that has some like political hangovers. Let's stick with goddesses.
We'll figure something out
as we talk.
Okay.
But basically every episode one of us will do the research on that woman, and we'll bring some facts about her life, we'll bring some stories from her life, whatever we find most interesting. Now obviously we could just send you towards the library where many of these women have multiple books written about their lives. They lived long and exciting. Well, they didn't all live long,
unfortunately,
but they all lived full lives. There's a lot to cover in a very short amount of time, so we'll be bringing a very small snippet of these women's lives. Obviously, you're encouraged to go and find out more if anything we say sounds interesting.
There's always Wikipedia, babes.
There's always the internet, right?
Yeah.
But what will happen is one of us will bring that information and we'll share it with the other. And the idea is that the student in that situation really doesn't know as much about that person, or she would like to know more. And what we'll do is we'll go back and forth. We'll share some information. Maybe the student has some questions or not, and we'll just kind of converse about this woman. We'll see how long these podcasts get. I don't know.
Who knows?
We'll figure it out as we go. Thank you for being with us on this journey as we figure out what this looks like, but we're excited to learn new things. Yeah. We're looking forward to it. So should we dive into
today's thing? Yes, who am I going to be learning about today?
So today I get to bring Teresa of Avila, who was born in 1515 in Spain.
Okay, and Villa being like a place, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Not just like the villa on the, like, it's A-V-I-L-A. So it's the name of the town.
Okay.
But she actually did kind of live in a villa, like in a palace, because she was born into a really rich family.
Oh, interesting.
So she was born to a family, a prosperous mercantile family.
Mercantile being?
Like cloth and that kind of thing.
Did they sell it, make it?
Correct. Okay. Yes, all of the above. Cool. So she grew up learning, so she was in the upper class. Definitively in the upper class. And so as a young woman in the upper class, she was learning all the domestic things she would need to know in order to be the best wife and mother that she could be.
Of course.
Because these were the only options at the time, right? Yawn.
I
say that fully aware that one of my biggest callings in life is to be a mom and a wife. So like it's, but when it's your only option, celebrated when it's choice, pushed against when it's required.
Right.
Yeah.
It's an ick if it's your only option, but a yay if it's the option you actually want.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that. Icks and yays. Okay. Anyway, so growing up, she's there's all these stories about her being really, really in love with extravagant things. So she really loves extravagant dresses.
Oh
and
my god,
food.
My girl!
I know. She grows up in the lap of luxury and she is lapping it up. She loves it.
Right.
But she also has these really fantastical imaginations. So there's a story of when she and her brother oh my goodness. I was going to say Rodrigo, but that's not it. Roderigo.
Okay.
So when she was 8 or 9, around that time, she convinced her older brother to set off with her to exotic lands so that they could be martyred for Christ. She was so fantastical that she had this idea that if they ran off and became enmeshed in the wars for Christ,
oh my,
that she would get martyred and then they would be remembered for forever.
Oh my.
So luckily, her uncle found them like a couple days later in the next town over and brought them home.
Good.
But she was forever known as having this really fantastical imagination and lively spirit, to say the least. I know. She also had this great charm and sense of humor that really charmed a lot of people, which eventually got to a point where her dad started worrying that it might get her in trouble because the world hates a humorous, charming young woman. So he sent her away to a convent.
Oh, of course.
I know.
That's...
I know.
Blank, like, that is the most basic plot point ever. I'm sorry, Dad, but you...
No imagination points.
Right.
Not a single one.
No creativity on how to, quote-unquote, fix your daughter.
Not at all.
Just convent.
Ugh. But what was funny is that he only wanted her there for a couple of years to learn, like, how to be docile. And how to be, you know. Y'all can't see it, but Gayla's rolling her eyes and it's perfection.
I legitimately just hurt my soul.
Yeah. Right. But his plan totally backfired because she ended up loving living in the convent. She loved the simplicity. She loved the female companionship.
Okay.
She loved that she now had say over her life. So even though after 2 years, her dad wanted her to return and get married and have kids, she secretly committed herself to the Carmelite convent in Avila and secretly became a nun. So while she was at the convent, she was just a student. But then to basically tell her dad, I don't want to get married, I don't want to have kids, she secretly became a nun.
That's
and
then awesome.
He couldn't do anything about it.
Yeah.
So eventually he comes around to it.
As
maybe he should have done at the beginning.
Right.
But he eventually relents and he gave her the convent her ample dowry because she was so rich. She had this big dowry that she was going to bring with her to her marriage.
Right.
Now he's given it to the convent. And then sort of through that and other things, the convent grows to this very luxurious space. There's servants at the convent. There's like good food. There's nice clothing, all these things.
Right.
And even though Teresa is very appreciative of those things, even though she really loves those comforts and being able to rely on those things.
Probably especially because she grew up with it all
exactly.
Her life, so it's very familiar.
Very familiar. And she starts, but in the midst of that, she starts realizing that really what she's yearning for is deeper spiritual connection, and that she starts giving away a lot of this stuff and starts reforming the convent from the inside out, saying, we should be focused more on spiritual faith community things, not material, we're better than everyone kind of things.
Right. These niceties aren't as important as
exactly.
God.
Exactly. So throughout her life, she's known as this charming, independent, very fierce woman who just lives her life by her own rules. But because she's so charming, she convinces other people to come along with her.
Oh.
So this is how she ends up. She ends up reforming. This is all happening also, I should say. So Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses to the door in Wittenberg, the church door in Wittenberg, in 1517. And Teresa was born in 1515. So she's born right at the very beginning of the Lutheran Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
So throughout her whole life and throughout her whole life as a nun, the Catholic Church is being reformed. Mm-hmm. We in the Lutheran Church talk a lot about the Reformation from the Lutheran standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
We broke off, became Lutherans. there's a whole podcast we could do about that alone. Like, I just said, like, 60 years worth of history in a sentence.
Right.
But at the same time, the Catholic Church is being reformed. And she is one of the people at the forefront of that, saying, like, we've basically become too lazy. We've basically become too focused on these niceties.
Right.
We've lost focus on God. Prayer, on God, on neighbor, on all these other things. Mm-hmm. So she's kind of reforming. So Luther tried reforming from the inside out. He ended up having to reform more from the out. She reformed more from the inside out.
Right.
So she does all these things in the Carmelite order, but then it expands out into other orders. But one of my favorite things is that I saw in my research, I saw that she never really, while she lost a lot of her love for the nicer things in life, she never lost her love of good food, which I was like,
yes.
This is where she and I are the same.
Right.
And she, there's a amazing quote that I found that she wrote that said, there is a time for penance, mm-hmm. and there is a time for partridge.
Oh, bless your soul.
I was just like, that is, I just really want to, I've never had partridge in my life. I have no idea what it tastes like, but I really want to cross stitch that and hang it in my office somewhere. Like, that just should be immortalized.
Empty pillow.
Yes. There is a time for penance and there is a time for partridge.
That reminds me of a quote that the lady who I'll be discussing in the next episode, she makes a very similar comment, but it's a lot more like passive aggressive.
I love it.
Yeah.
Tune in next week to hear that episode as well.
Oh my goodness.
So throughout her life, Teresa has these incredible visions, which is probably what she's most well known for.
Okay.
Are these visions that end up being part of the reason why she's such a controversial figure.
Oh.
So at the time, the visions basically teach her all about God's love in ways that were seemingly very extravagant, very emotional, very big.
So was it like, did people not like this because it was like very big and emotional and it was coming from a woman?
Correct. Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. To the point where her friends and her confessors at the nunnery, but at the convent, they all told her that it was probably actually visions from the devil. And that she should pray them
away. Oh my God.
Which she believed for a short time. She was like, maybe this is actually what's happening. So she would pray and pray and pray. But the visions kept happening.
Yeah.
And honestly, if she hadn't changed her mind and decided, these might actually be from God, I should try listening, we might never have heard about her. Because these visions are what kind of lead her to live her biggest, best, fabulous life.
Right, yeah.
So these visions tell her all about the idea that God is love, God is bigger and more extravagant than we can ever imagine. Mm-hmm. And through these visions, she actually develops a way to reach, in effect, spiritual enlightenment. She calls it the progress of the soul. Mm. You basically kind of move through these stages. Some of this started happening when she was really, really ill, which is another reason why some people thought it was from the devil.
Oh.
But she realized that that was just kind of the opening for her. It didn't mean that everybody had to be really, really ill to progress in this way. So anyway, right. So she's progressing through these different stages and realizes that this is the depth of meaning, the depth of life that she was trying to find in her niceties that she loved so much.
Right.
So she's realizing that those material things that seemed so exciting in her youth are actually pretty empty, and what she's really searching for and yearning for is this deep communion with God, with nature, with other people, this like spiritual energy that she's looking for.
Yeah.
So, because of these very large visions, she kind of becomes pretty, what's the word I'm looking for? She's not necessarily seen in the best light for most of history.
Is she like notorious?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she's too big. She's too boisterous. She's too charming. She's just too much. You know how women have often heard that phrase?
Yeah.
Like, you're just too big. Physically, emotionally, spiritually. Right. She's one of those people.
heard that phrase all my life, so I know where she's coming from.
Yes.
We get you, babes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Take your space. Take up your space.
Exactly.
So because of this, she isn't seen as a saint in the Catholic Church until way later.
Yeah.
As most saints are, right? Like, they have to be dead for, I don't know how long. But there's an amount of time you have to have been gone before you can be considered a saint. So she dies sometime in the mid to late 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
Not really sure when, but she dies. Well, that's not true. We do know.
She's immortal.
Right, exactly. She's still around.
Yeah.
We do know kind of when she dies, but the year that she died was actually when Europe was switching over their calendars. I got really confused in my research here. But basically, we don't know what year she died because we don't know what year it was. They were, like, switching over the universal calendar. And so there's some discrepancies there about when she actually died.
Yeah.
But what we do know is that she died while she was on, it's not a vacation, while she was on pilgrimage. So she was traveling as an alone, single woman throughout the world by herself.
Good,
which was also not heard of.
Yeah, no, I know that.
Barely heard of now, which is unfortunate because solo travel is amazing.
Yeah.
But, so she's traveling by herself and falls ill, and that's when she passes away.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't until 1622, so not quite 100 years later, but a while later, that she's canonized by the church, which is very exciting.
Yay!
Sainthood!
Yeah.
But it wasn't until 1970 that she became a Doctor of the Church, which is an official title given from the papal office, from the Pope.
Mm-hmm.
It's an official title given to saints who, and Catholics who may be listening, my apologies, this is after very minimal research, but my understanding is that it's given to saints who helped progress theology or the understanding of theology in new and exciting ways.
Mm.
So it's not until 1970 that she's recognized for her contribution to the Reformation, to the church, to the way that the Catholic Church kind of came out of the Reformation. She wrote something like 20 books or something. I don't know. She wrote a ton of books,
really?
Which was also really not heard of women at that time.
Oh my.
She wrote a ton of letters. She wrote a ton of poems. She just wrote a ton. And in all her writing and in all of her acting, reformed the church and really, and the Catholic theology in some really big ways.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1970, she was deemed a Doctor of the Church, and she was actually the first woman to be deemed a Doctor of the Church.
Oh, good for her.
Which was also part of the reason why I wanted to bring her up.
Yes.
So she was the first woman to be canonically recognized by the papal office in this way as having a deep impact on Catholic theology, but Christian theology more broadly.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, that's Teresa.
Oh my goodness.
She was a queen, a goddess.
For real.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah.
I, in the woman I researched, spoilers.
Yeah.
She had, like, one side of her family that grew up very, like, affluent, like, very comfortably, but the other side was not that.
Sure.
So, she grew up with a very, like, moderate, middle-class upbringing. So, hearing about, like, a woman who, like, was actually, like, very, very rich and got all these niceties and was, like, very bougie, it's...
Right.
It's so, like, refreshing. Like, oh my gosh, hey, my besties.
I know. It's so true. It's so true. Well, something we were talking about doing in these podcasts now is that when we get to the end of this teaching, is to share a gratitude that we have for this woman that we've just talked about. Something that we are in this moment grateful for, but something that we hope is also a longer lasting gratitude.
And something we admire about this woman.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I'll go first.
Okay.
You're
more knowledgeable.
It gives you like a couple seconds more to think about it.
Right.
I'm really grateful to Teresa for living her truth, for pursuing it. For not only living it, but for pursuing it. I think it's really I certainly feel the temptation to sit comfortably and to sit passively, because I've got great privilege and I have a lot of those niceties.
Right.
And I really loved that her truth was the niceties aren't it. Neighbor, community, faith, God, that's it. And right. She went after it. She didn't just wait around. She didn't just, And so I'm grateful for her courage and her fierce dedication.
We love a fierce woman.
That could have been the name of this podcast too.
But
that was the other thing I was going to say is that I can't remember if I said this earlier or not, but she was known for being for really treasuring obedience. She thought obedience was really, really important, but she believed her obedience to God was most important, which meant that she was seen as kind of a big troublemaker because she didn't obey the people she was supposed to obey.
Yeah. There's so only one person she actually liked to obey.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
So the person, power, persona, presence that she was... Oh, that was a fun alliteration.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm gonna remember that. Person, power, presence, persona. Anyways.
It's recorded.
That's right. I can go back and listen to it. But that she felt most obedient to was to God. And so that's another thing that I'm grateful for her, is that her obedience, while it was important to her, meant that she had greater obedience to God than to her fellow humans. So
I think the thing that I admire most about what you basically just summarized for me is that these people back, I'm assuming like especially men, but these people back in her time when she began having these visions and like telepathic communications with God, or however you want to explain it.
Right.
And she was like, you know, expressing how big and boisterous and emotional God really is. People thought she was like a hoax or whatever.
Yeah.
It's basically what I heard. Like, people thought she was faking it and was delusional and crazy.
That it came from the devil.
Like, right.
Yeah.
She was hysterical.
Yeah. 100%. Oh, okay. Fun fact. Later on, the people who like don't want her to be a saint actually say that she should just be the saint of hysterical women. That literally she should just be like, oh, we shouldn't canonize her. She shouldn't be a saint. She's just literally hysterical.
Right. She's out of her mind.
Right. Which, like, let's dive into the history of hysterics.
Hysterical
and
women.
My gosh.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a whole other pop. But sorry, you were talking.
Yeah, no,
and I interrupted.
Okay. One of my favorite group chats with like four of my friends, right, or three of my friends right now, we call each other the Female Hysteria Council. So it's a horrible history, but
right.
I just love mocking like female hysteria or whatever.
Yeah.
But anyway, people like thought she was like crazy, delusional, hysterical, like out of her mind, bonkers.
Mm-hmm.
And she didn't care.
Right.
At least from what I heard, she
right.
was just like, well, this is what God's telling me. Like, this is
right.
what I'm getting. This is my moral code. So, like, screw all of you. I'm just going to do it anyway.
Yep.
Like, I'm
yep.
not going to listen to you just because you have this opinion on me.
Right.
I'm hearing a better opinion from someone else, and I'm going to follow that instead. That's
absolutely.
It's very scary to, like, pursue something that is so, like, out there, I guess, something that is uncommon, unheard of, or just like unlikely for your standards. Especially when you have people telling you that around you.
Right.
So seeing her just be like, I don't care, like shrug it off,
right.
that's very admirable. I appreciate that about her. That's very cool.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's our first episode done. Well, that's a very small snippet about the life of Saint Teresa of Avila.
Please do your own research.
I was just gonna say, like we said at the beginning, please do read more.
Yes.
I have at least one book in my own library. Y'all are more than welcome to borrow, but we've got many more that exist in the world. So please do some more research on her if anything we said today inspired you to learn more about her.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I would say, keep on living your fiercest life.
Right.
Don't listen to others and listen only to God in terms of obedience, in terms of moral compass. I love that you said that. In terms of living the way that God created you best to be. I think that's the lesson we take away from Teresa.
Exactly. Yeah. And don't let people call you hysterical, because your hysteria is probably just actually intelligence.
Amen.
Amen!
And on that note, thank you all for being with us this episode. We'll catch you next week. Take care, everybody.
Bye!